Life is full of ups and downs, and I can think of no better way to describe Reading's season as once again we mix absolute despair with a bit of glory. Welcome to the Talisten podcast, episode number 51. I'm Dan Wimbush, editor of Talisten.com, and I am joined by my merry band of fellows, starting with Mr. Johnny Williams, deputy editor. Johnny, hello.
Evening. I'm just about recovered from the weekend.
Merry as well.
Yeah, you are merry. Yeah, and the voice you just heard is Mr. Alan West.
He was very merry last week.
He was. Sport lobster.
Yeah, sport lobster. Good one, that.
Right, we have reached episode 51. It's a non-stop thrill ride to episode 100. And a non-stop thrill ride... Okay, that's not how I describe Reading season, but it's a roller coaster. Let's put it that way. Last week, someone said, "Oh, you were a little bit negative last week, lads, focusing on, you know, the defeat against Leeds when we had that glorious cup quarter final." This week, I'm afraid we've got some more bad news, starting with that 1-0 home defeat to Wigan. But we'll end on a much higher note because we'll have that 1-0 fantastic win at Ipswich to talk about. So let's delve right in. Let's get dirty. Let's start with the Wigan game. Worst, my old man described this as the worst performance he has seen in years. Would you go that far, Westy?
It's certainly in the top three or four. It was very reminiscent of last year's Barnsley game where we managed to make an average team, well, not even an average team, a poor side who end up getting relegated, a bit like Barnsley, look like absolute world beaters, seemingly out of nowhere. And I think we always go into the Wigan game thinking, this is 3 points of Reading. At home, we haven't been great recently. Mm. But we thought, this is one to turn it around. And Wigan made us look like absolute mugs for 90 minutes. And even to the point where there was 11 minutes of injury time and Reading still didn't hardly get in their half.
Yeah, I think Sim, who wrote our match report, said I could have stepped on a sat-nav and it still would have done a better way of finding its way to goal than Reading.
It was abysmal, is the only word I can think of. Absolutely abysmal.
So I feel lucky because I was working that day because originally we didn't have the game on the Tuesday. So... I booked myself into work, got into Reading Station at about 8 o'clock and I thought, well, I could get a taxi up to the game or I could just go home, pop on the train to Reading West. Decided to do the latter. I was locked out of my house anyway and then I texted my dad and I was saying I was locked out of my house. He was like, good, I need an excuse to leave.
Oh, yeah. I will say this though, after last week we was talking about Gareth McCleary and you sort of, not panning him, but saying he doesn't produce too often. Mm. I sat and watched him. I've made a note of watching him this week against Wigan, and he was absolutely dreadful. You're right.
I think the whole
on this
team,
occasion.
I think the whole team. You know, you couldn't really. As I said, I didn't see the game, but it sounds like you couldn't really say that anyone had a very good game. I mean, the radio was sort of saying that they thought Norwood picking out a few passes, but my dad came back and he said Norwood was horrible. So yeah. I think people were looking for positives somewhere, but frankly, you couldn't really find any.
And the worst thing about it all was the sloppiest of goals they gave away. Frederic's goalkeeping on this occasion, and I've said it before about Kamanzi's error and being a voice and a big goalkeeper at corners and crosses that he doesn't do often enough for me. But this goal was, the comedy value of it was unbelievable. I don't know if you see the highlights of this, guys, but he's gone to clear a ball. He's had ages to clear a ball. He hasn't. Mate, he's nicked it off him, and then he should have scored, and Federici's made a good save to save himself. And then from the corner, he's palmed it back into play, and they've scored. And everyone's looking around thinking, well, have you done these for a 1-0 win, Federici? Because that was two shocking mistakes in seconds.
I think Jason Pearce was due a goal of the day. So you remember his miss in that last minute against Leeds last season?
And then we were up there. Yeah, Federici, scored, yeah.
Well, he was absolutely gifted a goal.
Yeah, well, that's... not too much more to say about that one. Chalaba at centre-back? Fill you with confidence?
I think I said last week, when you watch Chalaba, he's... quite casual at times when he's in midfield. Now, I don't know about you two, but it frightens me to death when I see a casual centre-back. On many occasions, he frightened me to death.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Hector, certainly earlier in this season, you could say once or twice, was a little bit casual. But I think this was... He's a bit of a Rolls-Royce, isn't he? You get the feeling that... I don't think he thinks he's above the Championship. But I think he's ready to move on to that next step. And I don't know why he's come down to Reading, really. Because... I mean, he's done it. He's been here and done it. And you just get that feeling that, I want to be mixing it with better players.
But he was on loan at Burnley, wasn't he, for the first half of the season?
Didn't get in the team, and
he didn't get in the team there. So clearly, Mourinho presumably said to him, look, come down to this level, get 6 more months under your belt, and then maybe you'll get a chance next season. I think I'd sort of compare it to someone like Danny Guthrie, who I think doesn't quite have the... grit at this level, but perhaps at a higher level. I'm not saying he's a higher level player, but in a better team, a more passing team rather than a sort of workmanlike team as we are at the moment, then he might be able to show himself off better. So if Chalaba was at somewhere like Derby or Middlesbrough, then you might see him in a better light.
I don't think he's a bad player. Like I said, I think when you watch him in midfield, he seems to turn up. And that is a you can't coach that, or you do it or you don't. And I think he will be a good player. Whether he'll get a place at Chelsea, I doubt. But I think for this moment in his development, he is a championship footballer.
Yeah, and he had a very good game. Ipswich Bowler counts in the midfield as well. Mark picked him out as possibly his man of the match, and he picked a fair few votes in that game. But just before we move on to the Ipswich win as well, any pleased with the Yak after his goal-scoring heroics?
Pleased with it. You don't know what to expect, really, from Yakubu, do you, at the moment?
Well, he was talked up, and then obviously he comes on against Wigan and...
he didn't touch the ball, but to be fair, nor did anyone pass the halfway line. Unless you were sat on top of the stand where the ball seemed to be most of the time, you're the only chance you actually have on the ball.
Didn't scream out to you, then I need a start?
No, he didn't hardly touch the ball when he came on against Wigan.
Fair enough. Well, let's move on from that misery to something much more positive. And I think we all joked, really. I don't think there's a single Reading fan that wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, well, we'll go and win at Ipswich now. I don't think many actually thought we'd win. But we did. A 1-0 win up at Portman Road. Fourth place going into that game, Ipswich and Reading just continue their streak of performing at their best when they're playing better teams. And again, Westy, how does this team go from being so bad to so good almost every 3 or 4 days?
I think we spoke last year, and I know I've said it on a number of occasions, that Reading can't cope with a team that sit in front of them because they've got no pace over the top. There's no way they can stretch teams. And I think going away from home means they can play counter-attacking football and they can sit and watch teams come at them. And we know we've got pace down the wing, so if you can get the ball wide, you can attack sides because they're coming at you. At home, teams don't do that to Reading. They sit there and watch them for a little while, 10, 15 minutes, say, well, what you got? And they soon find out we haven't got a lot. And they score, and that's the end of the game. That's what happened the last two occasions against Leeds and Wigan. And I think teams will continue to do that because it's been successful for them. But away from home, it's a different kettle of fish because teams have to come at Reading. And I think that's where they're strong, when they catch teams. And then, at the moment, they're holding on to Leeds.
Johnny, Jamie Mackey came in for Gareth McCleary in this one and scored. At first, I was following the game on Twitter because I was in town. And by the sounds of it, I thought, oh, this is a screamer of a goal. When you actually watch it, I mean, it's a decent hit. It's not exactly a Coutinho effort, is it?
If you watched the goal on telly, I think the cameraman was more...
He misses it.
Than anybody else. And I think we were saying last week that Mackey's got absolutely no end product and then he scores one from 30 yards.
Well, I think, two goals in the whole season, I'm not quite prepared to... rip up my backtrack. But okay, we'll stick with Mackie then. His loan deal expires this summer. Would you take a punt on signing him
at the moment? No, I think you can do better for similar money.
Johnny?
Yeah, I think you can, and I think you'd want someone with a bit of a future as well. I mean, he must be 28, 29. We've seen that he's a bit of a journeyman and that he hasn't really found a place at a club, and he can bring out a moment of magic like that. But I think, like just about the rest of the midfield, we haven't really seen that consistently from any player this season. And I'd much prefer to bring someone else through, either from the youth or a younger player that Clark can nurture and develop into a player that will consistently put in a performance.
See, I quite like Jamie Mackey. I always had a soft spot for him. And yeah, I think he's a great player to have in your squad.
He's a hard worker, isn't he? And, you know, I said it last week, he has no end product. He clearly can do it, but he can't do it consistently enough, which to be fair, is a problem with the rest of the team. But I think when you've got a lot of those players around and Mackie's loan ends at the end of the season, there's not much point keeping him because he hasn't nailed down a spot.
There's a reason, I suppose, he ends up at the Badeski, isn't there?
Yeah, Mackie will always be, I think wherever he goes, he'll always be a squad player unless he drops too low. But he's that sort of player. You know he'll come in and he'll work hard and he'll do a job for you, but he hasn't got that extra little bit of quality that'll get you back in the Premier League. That's where you want to be.
No, but I still think you need those players in your squad. And I think his effort and his work rate is top class. And I've got no problem
If you're picking him up for nothing, then sign him. If you're going to have to pay for him, then don't. It's as simple as that, really.
Well, we'll come on to some of the possible summer transfer plans in a minute when we talk about Nigel Howe's comments to Charles this week. But just before we leave the Ipswich game, Michael Hector comes back in. He obviously misses the Wigan game. And we talked about Chalobah's impact at centre-back, but Hector puts in a really good performance at Portman Road. Solid, sturdy. His play just seems to be getting better and better. And I made the remark to a couple of other people earlier this week. I'm so glad he's got a mentor in Steve Clarke, someone that's played in the heart of defence. He's played across the back four, even just in front of them. And he can talk to Hector and guide him, and his improvement, he's probably been one of the most improved players since Clark's taken over,
because all he's doing now is just keeping it simple. He's a lot more calm, Spoke about this again last week. The fact that, we talked about it just now, Hector used to have that bit of a streak of being a bit too casual. Whereas now, I think Clark has coached him into, you are a centre-back, you're not a midfielder, you're not, you're not necessarily meant to bring it out of defence and put yourself in risky positions. Unfortunately, he did have one moment against Leeds, but I think he didn't have much around him. There wasn't much else he could do. But at the same time, that defence, with Alex Pearce there as well, who is a competent player at this level, and we know that Steve Clarke is just, he's a defensive coach. He has solidified the defence. We're conceding far less goals. It's taken away a bit in attack, but when you can nick games on the break like that, it's the perfect recipe. And Michael Hector, well, you can see that he's a key part of that now.
Yeah, and I think I spoke about Hector before. I think he's learning his trade. I know he went to Aberdeen for a little while, played up there. He's not really had a lot of time to play Championship football, and he will get better and better, and you will probably find he'll be one of the best centre-backs ever to leave this club.
Lofty praise indeed.
Yeah, I'm sure he will leave at some point, because I think he's developed more than he has now. If he's a competent, well, not even a competent Championship centre-back, he's a good Championship centre-back at his age. Give it another 2-3 years, I think he'd be more than a good Championship centre-back. He'd be a Premier League centre-back.
Better than Matt Mills?
Yeah, definitely.
God, sorry, got himself another red card the weekend.
Does he always have to speak to the referee and moan and argue? I'll just send him off just for the first time he come over and started whinging.
Yeah.
To be fair, Pierce does that a lot. He gets in the referee's eyeballs a lot.
Matt Mills, a five...
Where did he learn that from?
A £5 million centre-back.
Mm.
I'll have you know.
Well done, Reddy.
Yeah, what else to say, really? I mean, let's not confuse ourselves here. This isn't a dominant Reading performance. Reading didn't go there and blow it, switch away. There were a few chances. See, Daryl Murphy had a couple he should have done better with. There are a few flashes across the box. But to their credit, and as we mentioned, a great defensive performance, Reading kept them generally at arm's length. The Federici didn't have too many saves to make. It's just, what more can you say? It's a
good professional away performance.
Exactly that. That's exactly it. They've gone away. They've got 3 points. And it's important because, while we've been saying for weeks, I'm not really too concerned about relegation. If Reading had lost that game, that's 3 defeats on the bounce in the league, and then you're facing Huddersfield away, and again, a team that could easily beat Reading, and suddenly you're going into the Forest game on the back of 4 straight defeats, and that's when things really start to worry. As it happens, Reading picked up the points, 13th in the table now, 40 points on the board, 9 points clear of Millwall, in the last relegation spot, and they've got a fair few teams below them as well.
And the other thing is, we had that win and we moved up to 13th. I think we were sort of like 18th before that. It shows you how tight that league is. I mean, you know, if we go away to Huddersfield on Tuesday night and lose that, then, and the teams below, you know, we could legitimately be back down to sort of 18th, 19th. It's that sort of league. And when you know, if we finished on Saturday down in 18th, 19th, you start to worry, but in reality, it's only 1 or 2 points between those sides.
Yeah, and a win against Huddersfield puts them in the top half. So it's just their Championship all over. It's the same every year.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a mini league developing, isn't it? I mean, you look at Wolves in 8th, they're on 51 points. Then you've got a 7-point gap down to Forest in 9th. They're on 44 points. They're only 4 points clear of Reading. So
I think the more embarrassing thing was this week that Charlton went to Wigan and beat them 3-0.
Mm.
Where did that result come from?
It's like Birmingham lost to Blackpool one
week. Yeah, well, I'm sure Ipswich will probably be saying the same thing. How have we gone and lost to a team that just got beat at home by Wigan? Yeah.
But you look at the teams we've beaten in recent weeks. Derby, okay, it wasn't in the league, but they've only lost 2 in the league at home. Ipswich Wolves only lost 3 at home, including us. Wolves have only lost 4 at home, including us. So, you know, they're good teams that we're beating.
Mm. It's just the poor size. It was last year, exactly the same.
Yeah.
All the teams that got relegated last year, I think, took points off Reading at some point.
And the annoying thing is, if you look at some of these games that we've lost at home this season, if Reading had beaten Leeds, Wigan and, say, Charlton this season, 9 points extra, suddenly a playoff push isn't too out of the question. But some fine margins, I suppose.
Yeah, but then you can say you go away to Ipswich now, no one's expecting to win there. So.
Yeah, if we don't beat Ipswich, don't beat Wolves.
Swings and roundabouts.
Look, we're 6 points further down and suddenly we're only 3 points clear of the drop zone. So yeah, swings and roundabouts, I suppose. But any lingering doubts? That survival, Westy?
I don't think so. I think Reading will finish in that 10th to 14th bracket somewhere.
Johnny, worried at all?
Not worried. I think we'll pull out enough results, but we do need to start beating these teams at home, because as much as anything, you need the supporters behind you. And most of the supporters see you at home. They want to be excited. Will they want to renew for next year?
That's the thing.
Absolutely. Right. Time to move on to a few bits of news in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. There's one story dominating the, well, the two stories I'd say dominating the Reading press in the last week. One has been Nigel Howe's comments in a series of media interviews he's given this week. But the other one, and more relevant to today, has been Reading's FA Cup ticket allocation. Now, when it was first announced last week, Reading said they'd taken 2,700 tickets with an option of another 1,600. All at 15 quid was the highest price you were going to pay for any ticket. That's for adults, 10 at concessions and 5 kids. Kudos to both clubs for that. I think we can all agree. Fantastic effort from both clubs for a big game. They could have legitimately charged.
Just cashed in a bit.
30-40. So no, massive credit to them for doing that and ensuring a full stadium. A lot of Reading fans were worried about their allocation, saying, oh, am I going to get tickets for this one? And that was in part down to the royalty point system, or on this occasion, the lack of a royalty point system. Now, we'll come on to that in pub chat, but I'll stick to the news for the time being. Reading have sold out their initial allocation. Those first 2,700 went. They were snapped up within minutes of going on general sale. So if you're a season ticket holder, seems only about a quarter of you wanted tickets. But as soon as they went on public sale, they sold out. The club took their extra allocation and they are currently being sold at the moment. As the time we go to press, although we're not in the press, time we go to air, they've not sold out. So if you want them, you can go on the website and buy them. And I said, 15 quid. Easy.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just the kickoff time.
12:45 in Yorkshire. Not easy on a Saturday morning.
And the travel ain't cheap as well. Unless you go with the Star Coach, I believe. I think that's...
I think it's £20, yeah.
Plus you have to, if you're not a member, you have to pay a tenner. Otherwise, people are looking for innovative train journeys and trying to persuade someone to give them a lift.
It's something crazy, like four changes or something to get up on the train.
Banbury, Birmingham. I've looked at it, believe me. So,
It's an epic journey, then.
I think you have to wait for an hour in Birmingham, which... I wouldn't wish on anyone.
It is. Well, full credit to all those Reading fans going. As I said, it doesn't matter if we sell out or not. The fact is, Reading are going to have at least 3,000 fans there, and that's a terrific effort for that time.
It helped with the noise factor, didn't it? So.
Exactly. I mean, Bradford looking like they're going to sell out. They've had a bit of a ticket catastrophe themselves.
Disaster.
Putting tickets on sale to season ticket holders with an unlimited amount of buys. And unfortunately for them, basically all the tickets went, leaving some season ticket holders completely without a ticket. They've since managed to secure a few others to get those season ticket holders their tickets, but I'm sure that'll play into the debate we have in pub chat a little later on. Regardless of what happens, the stadium's going to be rocking, so one to look forward to next month. Right, moving on to the other main bit of news. Nigel Howe. He's a man we don't hear too very much from. He's Reading's chief executive. He's been a long time on the board, as long as I can remember. I can't remember exactly when he joined the club, but certainly a very long time from the move to the Medeski, certainly. Long time right-hand man of Sir John Medeski. He's had a hand in a lot of his businesses. But since Anton Zingarevich took over, he's taken on more and more responsibilities of the club. He's had more executive input. He's taken on more day-to-day duties. And now it's emerged that since the ties have taken over, that power has only grown. He's basically the de facto chairman, really, because while Sir John Medeski is officially the club's co-chairman, along with Sassima, obviously he doesn't really tend to get involved in the
nitty-gritty.
The day-to-day runnings of the club. And this falls on Nigel Howe. He's the go-to man for the Thai consortium. And he's been speaking to the press this week. He's given a couple of interviews, one in particular to Tullison Podcast Extra co-host Charles Watts. Loads of good nuggets coming out of this. The first one that I wanted to bring up was all of the talk on the Anton Zingarevich era, and for me it was refreshing to hear a man just basically tell it as it was. Anton came in, spent above his means. I mean, when you read the sort of spending stories that Nigel was saying, Westy, what did you make of it?
Didn't he say something about Anton said that, don't worry, Dad will write me a check?
Exactly.
I wouldn't say that about my dad. If I said dad, write me a check, I know exactly what.
Apparently, he was told, "Oh, it'll cost us X amount to get promoted," and he said, "Don't worry, we'll spend three times that."
Yeah,
and dad will cover it, or some investors back home will help me out. By the sounds of it, he borrowed and borrowed and borrowed against parachute payments, and the money never came. Nigel Howe referenced directly players like Danny Williams and Royston Trenton and Pavel Pogrebniak that were put on big wages. And he said he has no ill feeling against the players because that was the deals that were arranged.
But it's not their fault, is it? We had this argument before. It's not their fault someone wants to pay him a load of money, because if they want to pay me a load of money, I'll play for them as well. So,
yeah. And the fact that most of them were low-cost deals at all, but against the club.
Yeah.
You know, after Anton did a runner, you could see exactly why he was doing it and what he was doing.
Yeah. I think the only thing you can point to, if you're going to spend money like that, you've got to spend it on players that are going to get you some money back rather than players like Bridge, who are
they're all vanity signings, weren't they, Westy? Yeah. They're all vanity, glamour signings, and well, let me brag to my mates.
He said he was going
to
buy internationals, didn't he? And I guess he did.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really want to waste any more air on.
No, but is it good that someone's actually come out and said it? Yeah. I mean, they told us anything we don't already know.
Mm. But it's just confirming what people have suspected for a long time.
Yeah, it's lucky he didn't bankrupt the club.
Well, I mean, you heard Steve Clarke's comments after the Leeds game, talking about the pitch and the fact that Reading couldn't spend any money on it on the summer.
Mm.
If you can't spend money on the actual pitch itself, yet alone players, that shows you how tight the money was.
And it's always a good pitch down there, to be fair. So. Mm.
Yeah. Especially it's got rugby on it just about every week as well.
Well, on brighter news, he did also say that the club's training ground move to Bearwood is still on course. That's back on track thanks to the new tyre owner. So that's
we've upgraded from a hog to a bear.
Absolutely. Who would win, bear v hog?
Probably bear.
There's one for your listeners at the Tyler stand. So the training ground move is on. That is obviously very, very important for the club's future and our Category 1 academy status and all that goes with it. So delighted to hear that's back on track. He also said there's going to be significant room to manoeuvre in the summer because some of those aforementioned big contracts coming off the books. And he also went so far as to say that, you know, that these contract negotiations are going to be delicate, that they can start doing them if they want to, but they're quite happy to sit and wait, see how things pan out. And if you listen to the Tyler Stern podcast extra on Friday with Charles, Charles got the feeling that some big names might go. Some ones that we might not expect, that they really just won't pay them the same rate that they were because those Anton contracts were bloated.
Yeah, we did speak about it, so didn't we, last week about players.
Federici
and Pierce. Players that can't, I don't think there's anyone that can justify going in there and ask for Premier League money. I don't think there's anyone.
Federici?
No, I don't think they can.
Gunter.
But it's whether someone else is prepared to pay.
Yeah, I'm sure someone else will be prepared to pay them, but will they, again, if they're free transfers, they might give them a big contract. But I don't think anyone can go into that office and justify taking a Premier League wage out of this club. I really don't.
No, I mean, it's fair enough. I mean, the only other thing to come out of this, are you happy that Nigel Howe's sort of taken on these duties? Obviously, we don't know terribly much about the man. Or I've not heard anything bad about him. But are you happy that he's basically said that the Ties aren't going to come out and speak to the public? They're not going to come and deal with day-to-day stuff.
Mm.
They will sit and convene and make big decisions, but they're happy to leave the running of the club to the football people. Mm.
Well, I think the problem you have is that the only thing that we've seen with Nigel Howe is perhaps in this time where it was a bit out of his hands. You know, give him a couple of years and then you can make a full assessment on him. You know, what happens over the next couple of years? Will we get the wages down? Will we start bringing in players? Will we balance the book, so to speak? But it sounds as though he's had a pretty tough time of it and he wants to sort of clear his name in a sense.
I think the good thing is, like we said earlier, he's a man that's been around the club for a very, very long time. Now, if he doesn't know how to run a football club, then I don't think anyone, well, this football club anyway, I don't think anyone would. So I think the Ties are basically using him as a go-between. They're like, okay, you make the sort of day-to-day decisions and then when a big decision needs to be made, we'll let you know what we want you to do.
Are you happy for them to sit in the background, Tyrone?
Yeah, I don't see... I think investment group, we spoke about it before, it's an investment group. Now, no one's telling me or knows that they know any more about football than me or you, but what they do know about is making money. So they put him in charge and they use him as a go-between because his experience is more than theirs in this line of business. But eventually they make a profit out of it because that's what they're here for.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, let's move on to pub chat then and we can have a little chat about royalty points.
The Tylehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to pub chat. Now, this is a topic that always seems to grate on some Reading fans whenever there's a big away game or a big fixture. It is royalty points. Now, I'll frame it with this question we had in from Alex Everson on Facebook. He said, on the back of a fair bit of moaning by people on Twitter around the general sale for Bradford tickets, can you understand the club's reasoning behind not using the point system? To me, it makes total sense. However, some feel rather annoyed they couldn't secure one during first allocation. 4,000 tickets is more than enough to ensure if you want one enough, you should be able to sort one. So, basically, to frame this, the club didn't put any... Usually, they have a royalty points criteria selling system. Yeah. So, and you accrue those points by going to home and away games, and they usually put it out in bands. So, it's season ticket holders with 2,000 points on this day, 1,000 points that day, 500 points. This time around, they just said all season ticket holders have got Friday, Saturday, Sunday to buy them. And from Monday, it's a free-for-all. You don't even have to be a member. You can buy a ticket. Some, obviously, quite annoyed about this. If you're either a season ticket holder with a lot of points, or if you're a non-season ticket holder but you have built up a load of points, say this
you know, this is the first season you've had to give up your season ticket and you've got 7,000 points. You're in exactly the same boat as Johnny come lately, who's just off the street and fancies a day out in Yorkshire.
Turn up for a big game.
And by the way, I have had a season ticket. Yeah. You're referring to me, Johnny.
Yeah, we're pointing at you now.
So where do you two guys say? I mean, if you, I mean, John Keane wrote a great article on the Telesend that we pinned back on the front page called Royalty, not Loyalty. Mm. Taking a look at the system. Where do you two stand on it? Do you think the club should have this sort of point system?
I mean, I when I was thinking about this, I sort of framed it in the context of this season. And especially, I just looked back at the Ipswich game. I think we took 450 fans or something up to Ipswich on a Saturday at 3 p.m. And if you're looking at it from the club's point of view, you're probably thinking, well, I don't know that we are going to sell 2,700 tickets, even to general sale when we eventually do that. Don't forget, it's only in a couple of weeks as well, so you can't be sort of still selling them in a week and you still need to post them out, etc. And I can feel the club's sort of sympathy in that I honestly didn't think that we would sell 3,000, 4,000 tickets for a game like this, bearing in mind it's up in Bradford, 5 hours away, at 12:45, it's being shown free on TV. I can see why they did it. When you frame it in the context of this season, how few fans have been going to away games, I think Fulham aside, where we sold about 3,000 tickets for that. But again, that's London 3 p.m. So I can feel their sympathy, and I think it just would have taken far too long if they'd done it in a royalty points sort of way.
Yes, no, I agree with you there. I see your point. I mean, what, we got 4,000 tickets at Bradford?
More than that. It's all right, 4,300.
So, yeah, I mean, it's for a percentage of our home matches, that is a massive percentage. And I probably thought they was surprised by the demand in their defence. But I think long term, I think the loyalty point system is, well, loyalty point system now is the only way of securing tickets fairly. But even then, like whenever we end up at Wembley, I mean, we're always worried about getting a ticket, but to be fair, we're getting probably double our home attendance. So I've never struggled to, I've always had a season ticket, but I've never struggled, or people I know have never struggled to get a ticket.
What do you make of the decision, I think it was taken this season, it might have been at the start of last, if it was, I apologise, but of now it's season ticket holders and royalty points first, then royalty points second. So you could have five times the royalty points of, say, me, but because I've got a season ticket, I'm immediately put in front of you in the queue. Do you agree with that?
Again, I don't think it...
I think it's more sort of about current loyalty, isn't it, really? I mean...
Yeah.
But someone would argue, oh, I've followed the club home and away for 20 years, so I can't get a season ticket this year.
But then someone else would argue that I'm only 18 and I've got my first season ticket. Mm. You know what I mean? You could say it's not fair to the younger supporters, because, let's face it, the people that travel away are going to be between the age bracket of about 18 and 30. Mm. Whereas the people that go past that age don't generally travel away or pick and choose the games due to financial constraints.
And also, you're not investing this year. I mean, you know, you could say you've got 7,000 points built up, and if you say that in 10 years, I mean, it might have been points that you built up, you know, before 2010, so you haven't been to a game in 10, 15 years. So you got another question then of, guess, you know, sort of when does it reset? Does it only last over a 3 or 4 year period? Because ultimately what the fans want, what the club wants, is fans that are consistently putting money into the club, not just here and there, I think.
Yeah, and this is another argument as well. A lot of fans say, well, I should have more points because I've been away to Middlesbrough. Whereas you actually get more royalty points for going to a Carling Cup game, Capital One Cup game, against Newport at home. Yeah.
Milk Cup. Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Worthington.
Worthington.
Yeah, you do. You get five, don't you?
And I don't know what the point is, but generally, you tend to get more. Obviously, you get a massive bulk for having a season ticket as well. And some fans are saying, well, I should get 50 points because I've travelled bloody 300 miles up to Middlesbrough and I'm not getting rewarded for that.
If you don't like it, don't.
But no, you can see what they mean. Do you think fans should be, do you think maybe it should be a sliding scale of...
So what you're saying then, what you're saying is we should have a point system based on where you go. So if you go to London...
Well, I'm not saying either way, but that
it's
is...
Like, it's like mile, isn't it? It's like petrol. How much petrol do you have to put into
I reckon this is a good idea. I reckon it's a good idea. I reckon if you go to Middlesbrough, it's 20 points. If you go to Fulham, it's a point.
But I think the point that John makes in that article is that the club don't see more money from... It's all, for the club, it's all about the money that they get.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And they don't get that much money for you going up to Middlesbrough, certainly not as much as you do for going to the Mad Stad to watch a game, for buying a Coke, buying a hot dog.
Yeah, yeah.
You might pop to the mega store as well. I mean, you can even extend it to the argument of, well, if I buy a shirt, should I get 20 points or 30 points or whatever? Because they're getting more money that way. And you have to realise that for the club, it's about how much money you put in to the club, and that is how they reward you with the points.
Yeah. But I suppose there's other... I know what you're saying. The club are taking money and that's their reward. But what I think Wim's argument is you should be rewarded more for your loyalty, follow them away further because you've had to use more money to get there.
Well, as I said, I don't even know if I agree with it. I mean, this is just an argument that's been presented. I'm a bit like Johnny here. I'm sitting on the fence. I'm not so sure that you should get more points just for going to Middlesbrough away as if you would for going to Newport home in the cup. At the end of the day, it's an effort to go and see a game. And that's, to be honest,
it is at a minute, especially at home.
You summed it up nicely. It's your choice if you want to go to Middlesbrough.
Yeah, that was making.
I do have sympathy when these big games come along and we do have limited allocation. I think Brentford earlier this season was a classic example. I'm a season ticket holder. I missed out on getting a Brentford ticket because I didn't have quite enough royalty points to get a ticket. Now, I was a bit annoyed. It was my dad's birthday. I wanted to get a ticket. In the end, I ended up going in hospitality. So that was the one saving grace of a dire game.
Yeah.
But I, you know, had that not been an option to me, I would have been annoyed. And I would have been thinking, I'm a season ticket holder. Why can't I get a ticket to this game? But it is what it is. And you've got to have some sort of system.
Otherwise it turns into a farce. Like at Bradford, where they've just let you buy as many tickets as you like. And then we're a mistake.
As Johnny said, that's a calculated gamble, though. And I know there are a lot of people panicking on Twitter. And I said it a few days ago. Look, if there's only, say, what would you say, probably 10,000-11,000 actually in the stadium for that Wigan game for Reading fans?
Yeah, there wasn't many.
You know, if only that many could be bothered to go to a home game against Wigan, are 4,300 really going to be that desperate?
No way, we'll end up sending tickets back, I reckon, still.
I think a lot of people are going to buy the tickets and then sort of think, actually, I can't really get up there. Because as I said earlier, you're spending, if you go on coach, you're spending 30 quid. If you go on the train, you're spending a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, twice as much as that.
You know, if someone drives or whatever, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So I think people are just sort of investing and thinking, well, you know, I'll see closer to the time whether I can actually.
We're sat here at what? It's now 7:30, 8 o'clock. Tickets have been on sale now for nearly a full day if you're not season ticket holder. And if you were a season ticket holder, 3 days. Mm. If you were that desperate to go,
you've got
your ticket, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, there might be someone who was umming and ahhing, and maybe we do sell that, and in a week's time goes, oh man, I missed out on a ticket. More for you.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm.
Stop whinging, in other words.
Yeah. I mean, I think. And thus ends this podcast.
Maybe we should get royalty points to do this. I mean, how much should we recruit for this?
TT podcast points.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when people come down to the pub every week and doing it, won't
they? Yeah, that when we get people that listen
to
us.
We'll have a scanner on the door.
If they can own up to it, they get a few royalty points.
And if they buy a pint, they get, you know, a few more as well. Yeah. So how much they put behind the bar.
Okay, well, we'd like to hear your thoughts on this issue. I said you can send your tweets into @thetilelessend. You can send us an email to thetilelessend@gmail.com. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/thetilelessend. And Westy?
I know this is not going to be popular because we're sponsored by Waitrose, but if we used to have the Tesco system where you just, everything you buy, you put on the barcode and get the points up that way.
With a club card, yeah.
Yeah, club card.
They tried doing that. Didn't they have that cashless card system for buying food and stuff?
I don't remember.
Do you not remember it on the concourse a few years ago?
Yeah, like a key fob.
Oh, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
They had to like load up your card before you got like a hot dog and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Right, pain.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sure you don't remember it. I think they binned it off fairly quickly.
It probably didn't last long.
No. Anyway, right, let's move on to your tweets and emails.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetilehurstend
and facebook.com/thetilehurstend.
Right, welcome to the mailbag. Thank you very much to all of those of you who've tweeted in and sent us Facebook messages. Very much appreciated. You just heard the contact details, so I won't bore you again. Instead, I'll bore you with a plug for iTunes. Please subscribe to the show. It helps us out, notches us up in the charts, and just generally gives us a warm, fuzzy feeling inside.
It puts us above Sport Lobster.
The Sports Lobster,
yeah.
who had an unusual amount of hits this week.
Yeah. And if you've got the time to leave us a review and give us 5 stars, 4 stars, or whatever you fancy giving us, I said it.
As long as it's not 2 stars or 1 star.
Yeah, don't. If you ain't got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Mm.
We don't want honest reviews here. We want unbridled propaganda.
Biased.
Exactly that. That's what we're here for. Right, anyway, plugs aside, let's get on to your Facebook and tweets. So we've already read out Alex's Facebook message in the pub chat. Move on to Ian Phillips. He says, this is very premature, but hear me out. Bradford beat Chelsea. Chelsea are the highest position team in English football right now. So if Reading beat Bradford, surely that makes us the best team in England, right?
It's a bit like the boxing system where you can have a crack at the title if you get a bit nearer the top boys.
It's like that unofficial World Cup, isn't it?
Isn't it Iran who are winning it at the moment?
Something silly like that. It goes in cycles. So it starts with the World Cup champions. Then for the next 4 years, it's whoever beats someone. So say...
I thought it started like in the beginning of the history of football. Oh, no, it has started. But so like England v Scotland, you know, however many years back, was like the first ever game. And then whoever beats England is now the new unofficial world champions. It keeps going in a chain.
Yeah, but it now restarts every World Cup.
Oh, okay.
So say Germany play Australia in a friendly and Australia win. They're the unofficial world champions, and they lose to Iran, and then
okay, it's a goes bit like on. The boxing system.
So by that definition, if Reading beat Bradford, we'll be the best team in the country.
We're the number one contenders.
Well, and we could legitimately sing, "We are the greatest team the world has ever seen."
It's a little bit clutching at straws, but we'll take it.
We'll take that sort of glory.
It'll probably never happen.
Tell you what, if you actually printed out a trophy and gave it to the club, it would probably be in the cabinet.
It'd be at the front.
Be one of those stickers on the front of the programme, unofficial world unofficial champions. World champion. Right, he goes on to say, also, Dominic Samuel, knowing how well he's adapted to League One, is he in with a good shout for the first team next year, even if we do extend the Axe contracts? Now, Dom Samuel scored two goals. Have you seen them, either of you two? The first goal was fantastic. Takes a great touch and just powers and paces his way through and slots home with a great finish. I've not seen a Reading player score a goal like that for ages, Johnny.
Yeah, I can't say any more than that.
As
we said, there must be something in him that the other managers just don't see, because he hasn't had a look in for years.
No, and he's of an age where he should be having a look in now.
Well, he's got three goals now for Coventry, so hopefully he keeps doing well. Do you think there's much of a chance of extending Yak's contract? Based on what I've seen so far, not really. I mean, obviously he scored the goal at Derby, but... I mean,
the thing is he working himself up to fitness? Is that why Clark isn't putting him straight in the side, or is he just staying loyal to the other? I mean, you know, you want to see him get an extended run in the side, and you've seen what he can do with that goal against Derby, which was a top-notch goal. If he can score 5 or 10 more, then absolutely, I'd consider it.
I think Yakuba will start tomorrow.
Obviously. I was going to say, I think
he will start. So again, we'll be able to judge him more when he's had a few 90 minutes.
Yeah. So far, it's a no from me, but. Very early days.
Depends what his wages are.
Depends how much money we've got to bring in the young and hungry players that we always used to like under Koppel.
That's right. Well, there's no resale value in Yakubu, is there? So you'll be paying big wages for a player that's, let's face it, on the back end of his career.
But if he gets you up, or gets you...
Yeah, if he gets you up.
If he scores enough goals.
Like Roberts.
I made the same argument about Glenn Murray. If he kept you up and scored enough goals,
it's
an investment that, you know, you don't get a return on it at the end, but... Still an
investment. Well, it's like Roberts, you did get a return for it, you know, because they got in the Premier League and it
got £100 million for it, effectively. Exactly.
Yeah, and then he got a return for 2 years.
I love how you said, let's face it, he's at the end of his career. as if somebody's going to say, actually, he's not peachy. I suppose he is only 32. He's only
32, unofficially or officially.
He's in his prime.
Still in his prime.
Right. Moving swiftly on to the tweets, and Ollie Allen, who writes our ref watch for us, he says, if you could keep just one player who's out of contract in the summer, who would it be?
Federici.
Whoa, straight in there. Over Karachan and Gunter? Dadigafru? Someone else has shouted out that random name.
I don't think anyone's saying Danny Guffrey, are they? No, I'd probably Gunter, just because I think he's worth more than any others.
And because it would get Stephen Kelly out of the club. That's what you're really saying. Guarantee Stephen Kelly's out of the club.
Yeah, although he's not actually on my radar at the moment, so he must be playing all right.
I would say Cem Karacan, and this is obviously surprising for me to say, given that I was one of the people who gave him the most underachieving player award before Hal Robson-Kanu monopolised it.
Yeah, for the next 3 years.
Years ago. But no, if he can get back to that sort of form he was showing just before he got injured, he's a fantastic dynamic midfielder. But it's, how's he, you know, after a year and a half out, and again he's picked up another niggle.
Yeah, he's picked up another injury. I mean, we want to show the loyalty to a player like that, but at the end
of captain.
Exactly. But you know, I mean, it's difficult. It's really, really difficult. I mean, Steve Clark obviously is going to see him on the training field, see how much he's recovered, and you know whether he's got a future. I hope he does. I really hope he does. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, the priority would be Federici, who's in the form of his life. He's made a couple of mistakes recently, but he's had a brilliant season before that.
Don't know. For me, the Reading way is built around really dynamic, hard-working midfielders, and Karachan is someone like that, and he is one of the few players that you honestly think will, you know, bleed for the shirt.
Yeah, become a legend, yeah. He could do.
Well,
yeah.
The good thing is we've all picked different players, so that's how difficult it is.
Indeed, right. On a slightly different tangent, Gabriel Sutton tweets in saying, if you could buy any three championship players, who would they be? I'll start this one off. Will Hughes from Derby.
Yeah, I was going to say Will Hughes.
Ross McCormack.
No.
No?
No.
Ooh, overrated.
I wouldn't pay $10 million for him.
No.
I just think he's can score set pieces, score goals from open play.
He's too good for this league, but probably he's one of those players that getting the Premier League probably wouldn't be good enough.
He's not got enough about him for me.
Nah.
And I'd say Jordan Rhodes.
Yeah, Jordan Rhodes.
Just gets goals.
Yeah.
I like Lee Tomlin at Middlesbrough. Good attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
I think he'd add a lot to the team.
I really liked Adam Clayton before he went to
Not
Borough.
Just for the beard either.
No.
Not enough players with beards these days.
Unfortunately, as much as I love Oliver Norwood, we got the worst of those two.
Sambalonga?
Yeah, good pacey striker. Mm. Yeah.
Not going to play for you for the next year, though.
But they're all players in attacking positions that we're looking at.
Yeah, we're bringing in centre-back.
Well, I think Reading have got one of the best goalkeepers in the Championship. I don't think there's a Championship goalkeeper I've seen this.
As well.
I don't think I've seen a Championship goalkeeper this year that I think, oh God, I'd love to have him at the club. As for defenders...
It's workable, isn't it? It's enough.
Yeah.
In terms of the defenders, we're keeping enough clean sheets.
BK played well when he came back to the
Yeah, he got a world beater.
So Matt Mills had a pretty good game when he came back.
Yeah, he was spraying that ball right out to the far and didn't kick it off once, which was nice.
That's what doing Millsy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
it's not, it's, again, it just shows there's not a lot about in the Championship, is there? And I've had discussion before, sort of 10 years ago, you used to get a lot of sort of big names in the Championship. You used to end up going into Premier League, to like top Premier League sides, or at least top half, Premier League teams. But now there's not anyone that you'd really pick out, is there? When you're buying players like Ross McCormack for $10 million, they're playing in the Championship, you're thinking, something's not right here.
Mm. Well, unfortunately, clubs are just increasingly turning to abroad, aren't they? Mm. For players that not a lot of clubs are prepared to give a punt. But
I've got another question for you. Which, if you could bring an old Reading player back that's still playing now, who would you bring back? Antonio.
Shane Long.
Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Sigurdsson, yeah. I mean, in the Championship, though.
Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Oh, what? You've got Tab, the two Hunts.
Yeah.
Is Kevin Doyle technically a Championship player at the moment?
James Henry, is he?
Henry?
Yeah. BK, as we mentioned.
BK.
Antonio.
Probably. I like him when he was here. He was a bit raw, but...
Nathan Tyson. Darius Henderson.
Oh, God.
Brett Williams is soon enough to be back in the conference. Joby.
Ledgerwood.
Oh, God.
We wanted Ledgerwood at the start of the season, didn't we?
Has he got a club yet?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Anyway, can't answer that. Right, I'm going to move the debate on. Right, George Dolan says, if we secure safety over the next few games, should we take the remaining league games to bed in some youngsters, perhaps getting Samuel back from his loan with a few games left and giving him a run ahead of the Yak?
I think we bedded him in at the start of the season, didn't we?
Yeah, needed to.
Would you bring him back, though, if once we get past, say, the 50-point barrier?
But what are we waiting for? Why not bring him back now and sit him on the bench?
Because, well, at the moment, you want them to be playing games. Obviously, Dom Samuel's out playing games, so is Craig Tanner.
Yeah, Tanner and that, I don't think they're physically ready. But Samuel, he should be. So I don't understand why he is, like you said, I don't know what's wrong with him that he hasn't been given a place on the bench every week. Especially earlier in the season, we didn't have any strikers. There was hardly anyone here.
And he was banging home goals on 21s.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand what's wrong with him.
Mm. I think you've got a big enough squad, as it is, to be honest, at the moment. And I think there's going to be, as we're seeing from Clarkson, some rotation in there. I mean, Mackie in for McCleary. The left wing, Haraldson, Canoe, Nick Blackman keep swapping over. Strikers will probably see the Yak get a few starts as well. So I think there's enough in there that it will just rotate.
I still
really
want to see more Aaron Cole. I think he showed enough in his few games earlier this season to show that he's going to be a really good player.
But you've already got a very packed central midfield.
Yeah.
With all those players back.
Yeah. Again, I think you'll probably find next year,
yeah,
them players will be back. You'll see them again. Because once the big earners go, Guthrie's and players like that, then there'd be more room for them sort of players to come back in again.
Yeah, and Gary Woodward tweets in a very similar vein and says, once we're safe from relegation, do you think Clark should allow some of the youngsters like Cool and Cardwell a chance? Not heard too much about Cardwell.
He's a centre back, isn't he?
No, he's a forward.
He's a forward. Oh, he's a massive guy, isn't he?
Scottish.
He's 6'4" or something like that.
Scottish under 21.
Yeah.
I'm never against giving a younger player a chance.
No, I just think managers see more than we do.
Yeah,
you know. So you might see little glimpses of brilliance
if they're good.
But in a Championship, you tend to get battered by some teams, you know, and it can be difficult to play in under that. Because you watch under 21 football, it's very different, very much slower. It's less physical, and I think that's where you find a lot of these players come into the first team. They think they've got ages on the ball when they haven't.
Well, Aaron Cole. I don't know, I just praised him a minute ago, but I think his last game was at Brentford.
and he slipped over and gave away a goal, and you could see his head drop, and it really take a blow. So
it is hard.
But you talk about the managers, and they want to win games. They don't want to think, oh, I'll put a few players out, you know, some of the under-21s, show them what we got. They want to win games. They want to finish as high as we can in the table. They want to build confidence. They want to build momentum.
Mm.
As a fan, you want to see these players, but the manager, he wants to get results. He wants to keep his job.
That's what they're judged on. And if you get three or four defeats, everyone's saying, why are you putting these youngsters in?
Yeah, I think it's a bit different when you get to the last days of April, early May, and it's, you know, get out in the sunshine. But until then...
But then you're sitting out players like potentially like Norwood, who are on the bench anyway, in order to put in younger players.
That's it.
Right. Well, Gary Woodward goes on. Well, he's got another question. He says, do you think the team thrives better under pressure? Too little pressure causes these damp squib games like Wigan.
I think I'd discuss why they're not that good at home at the moment, Reading. I don't think it's anything to do with the pressure of a match. I just think it's playing away from home.
There's no one in that side. I mean, McCleary perhaps aside on occasion, that you think has one defining ability, like really good in the air, stacks of pace, can take three men on and put a cross in. There's no one in that side that does it for me at the moment.
No one would frighten you if you was playing for another team, I don't think.
Yeah. I think, you know, you can cover pretty much everyone in that team. And so when teams come and sit back and do that, you know, we're completely nullified.
Yeah.
I wrote in depth up on thetalisman.com last week. I think the team's stale. I think they're stale. I think they lack ideas and they lack the creativity and the nous to break down teams. And that's why we've seen a gradual deterioration of the home form over the past couple of years. Because, as we've said, how many times have we sat on this show and said they don't know how to break a team down?
No.
And... That is the result of the financial woes we've been under, because players have, for too long, there are certain players that shouldn't be at this football club anymore. Let's be honest. Not because they're awful footballers, but because Reading need better. Because they've shown, you know, we had this debate last week, didn't we, about how long to give these players for potential.
Yeah.
That leash would have been a hell of a lot shorter if we'd had money to spend.
Mm.
And, you know, and they haven't had that fear of competition either. And for me, I argue that I don't think as a player you're going to be determined to innovate and be creative and take gambles if you're settled and if you're happy and you know your place isn't under pressure. You're just going to do what you do normally because it keeps you in the team.
Mm.
You haven't got someone that's knocking on the door or doing wonder things on the training ground because who's going to take your place?
No.
John Obita could have a run of 10 awful games. He ain't going to get replaced.
No.
So,
I think money, again, I've spoken about this before, but I think money has a factor in it as well. I think that in their lives, they get a comfortable, they're on a comfortable wage. They know they're getting paid big money. They can go through the motions to a certain extent. And they haven't got that drive and that hunger anymore to not only improve their careers, because they're stepping sort of back, but they're just not motivated enough to put in big performances every week.
I think they're all professional. I'm not accusing anyone in their club.
Don't get me wrong. No. I'm not saying they don't try. All I'm saying
is... They're not giving that extra 5%. They're not staying on the training ground till the sun goes down.
It's like Stephen Hunt. I saw Stephen Hunt syndrome. He was an average player that worked his socks off to get to the top. Now, once you get to the top, he still works his socks off because he's had that. He's got that drive. Still, even now when you see him play, he still plays the same sort of way. But he was a player that was not a good footballer, that come from nothing. He was probably going to fall out of league football and thought, actually, no, I need to pull my socks up. And then he had this meteoric rise, really, by his standards. Well, you got players like Paul Grebniak, who played higher... Play for bigger clubs, getting paid the most money that anyone's going to give him, because he's never going to get that again. So now he can think, well, okay, I'll put in performance, I'll try. And I never say that, I think he tries quite hard. But he's not got that will and that drive to think, actually, no, I want to be a Premier League footballer again, because he's just not bothered anymore. In his home family life, he's probably settled and happy, and why push yourself?
And that is exactly why not having funds is a doubly damaging thing, because... Says you've not got that threat, and it's like in anything. It's like if you know you're at a job, you know you're not going to get sacked. You could do, as long as you turn up on time and you do your things, and you're not going to get sacked.
No,
you're not going to put that extra yard in. And I can't blame him, because players are human beings.
And that's why Copper was wanted young and hungry, because he wanted players that hadn't been there, hadn't done it, because he knows that they're the ones that are going to want him.
And that was his downfall, because when those players had lost that edge,
He stuck with them.
Anyway, got a bit deep there. Moving on. So
let's bring this silly again.
Let's bring this. Okay, I'll go for a silly one.
Hoop says, if you were to rename the point system at Reading, rather than royalty points, what would you have?
Tesco's club car points.
What's this free football plugs we're giving for Tesco's here? Have they slipped you some money?
Other supermarkets are available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what we did say, though, off air, we didn't hear, and I thought it was pretty good, is Johnny came up with an idea that you had to clock out as well with your club car to say what time you left the match.
You left at half time, you're banned from the next one.
Or you're asked to say why you left so early.
You have a sit-down interview with Kingsley.
Yeah.
What would I rename it?
I've got nothing. I'm thinking of a pun for tie. No.
We'll have to think about that one.
Yeah. We'll bring back next week.
Sorry, Hoops.
He sprung that on us.
I don't know.
Loyal tie points?
No. I don't like it. Moving on.
Royal tie?
Royal tie, yeah.
Bit of playing words there?
Okay.
Not sure what words.
Anyway, at the Tyler sends the Twitter if you've got ideas. Stacey says, do you think McCleary's drop in form is due to the fact that Gunter isn't playing? Gunter was the same while McCleary was absent. So basically, do they play worse when the other one isn't in the team?
Maybe there's something in that. I don't think so. I just think McCleary's not been fully fit for some time. I think he keeps carrying little knocks and eventually that catches up with you.
Was that your champagne moment, by the way, when he left the pitch early, Mr. McCleary.
What was that all about?
I presume it's for a toilet break.
Must have been, mustn't it?
He must have been thinking I'd be in it at sort of 5 to 10.
He must have seen 11 minutes of injury time. I can't hold on that long. She doesn't have Paula Radcliffe. That'd have been better.
Oh, no thanks. Obviously got a factor. I think obviously you play better if you know the player's game behind you or in front of you. I think that's got to play a part, but I don't know, McCleary's just not been...
I just think he's missing his edge for some reason.
Yeah. And Gunter was playing... I think the upswing in Gunter's form came when Steve Clarke came in when the whole of the defence started playing well.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if McCleary's not playing, you know, every game because he's still carrying a bit of that injury.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't think he's fully...
He's carrying an injury at the end of last season.
Someone was tweeting to me saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter that McCleary's not playing. He's off in the summer. I can't see a team playing that much money. I think his value is...
Low at the moment, yeah. I don't think he's done enough. No, he certainly hasn't done enough this season.
And he's just signed a new contract as well, so Reading aren't going to let him go cheap either.
Nah. Again, no, I don't think that.
No. Right, Chris Hartley, genuine question. Do you feel that our fans need to be louder at home and thus they support the team the right way?
Yeah, definitely, Chris. But
sorry, do they support the team the right way?
No, I think at home especially, and again, I've said this before, I think it's the curse of the all-seater stadium to a certain extent. I think that people just go, and I think clubs have got themselves to blame for this, that they go to be entertained, and if you're not entertaining them, then they will show you that they're not happy about it.
I think it's the turgid football that we're seeing at the moment, really. I mean, the last couple of homes games, there's been a sort of moment around the 60-minute mark where it's like, come on, actually, buck your ideas up, the drummer gets going, the whole stadium gives a little bit of a roar. But then the team don't sustain that. If the team are playing well, everyone's happy. Everyone's
creating chances, having drama, getting tasty in the middle.
That's just not happening on the pitch.
Yeah, I think everyone wants fans to be louder. From my own personal point of view, I sit in Y25, generally a loud area for noise. I find it hard to make noise at the moment because I've got 3 or 4 empty seats either side of me.
Yeah.
And as much as I'd like, so I haven't got the confidence, unfortunately, to sit there and sing completely on my own. And I think a lot of people feel the same. You know, if everyone around you is creating noise, you create noise, but... And there's these gaps, it's harder to do.
The thing is, it's difficult now because, like, obviously when it was standing, everyone was in a group and you couldn't really point out where the person was shouting from. It was just the sort of, it's over there somewhere. Whereas now, if you stand up and shout anything, you've got the stewards coming up and telling you to sit down. You know what I mean? So they don't encourage you to get behind a team or shout or sort of give it the big one to a certain extent without saying, "Oh, actually, sit down, lads." You know what I mean? You've had too much to drink.
Yeah, or you run the risk of getting picked on by the away fans.
Yeah, well, there is that, yeah.
That one person in the shorts who always seems to get the treatment every week.
Yeah. And he still wears the shorts.
He still wears the shorts, credit to him.
I think he enjoys it.
Credit to him. I don't know. Right, Chris also follows up with another question. So, Michael Hector, the next big thing at Reading.
Yes.
I think we covered that one earlier.
I've been critical of him earlier in the season, but I think he's got a lot better.
It'd get better still, wasn't
it? A lot better.
Yep, agreed. Derek says, did anyone else worry that when Reading tweeted Jamie Mackie with a 25-yarder, it was a mistake? Sounded like something the Reading FC account daydreams about. I worried it was a draft tweet accidentally sent.
Well, it wasn't quite the McCleary 25-yarder away. Was it Watford?
No,
was it Watford?
QPR?
QPR where he banged it in top corner. But, it was technically 25 yards, I suppose.
Yeah, it didn't emphasise how good the goal was. It just said where it was from.
He said that, but I remember I went to see Reading away at Plymouth a few years ago. It's kind of why I've got a soft spot for Joe Mackie, and he smashed in a 25-yarder in similar circumstances to beat Federici. Or it might have been Marcus Hanneman, can't even remember.
This is why sometimes it's better to listen to games and form your own memories out of what they've said rather than watch the real thing. A bit like 50 Shades of Grey.
First 50 Shades of Grey well. Reference on the podcast this year. Our final tweet comes in from Forward Norwood, who says, question for the podcast. Reading FC have the fourth lowest away attendance in the league. How does a club create a better away following?
Play better.
Win.
Although, to be fair, we are winning away from home.
Be at the top of the league.
Yeah, I don't... Be towards the middle of the country, maybe.
Yeah, I think generally...
We travel away well in London.
Yeah, I think Reading have a good following when they're doing particularly well. Yeah. Same as at home. You have a full stadium when you're in the Premier League. I
completely agree with the club not thinking that potentially we're going to sell 4,000 tickets for Bamford.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Because we take 400 to Ipswich. I'll admit that I didn't go to Ipswich. But I still think that the club, you know, did the right thing in the circumstances.
I don't know if someone wants to do this because I know people like this sort of thing. I like to see the average for the season away from home.
I think we're amongst the lowest.
1,000? Is it?
Saw the table earlier in the season and we were certainly down there.
Yeah, so 4,000 at Bradford, no one thought that was going to happen, even for a quarter final.
I think just historically we're just not a big club that travels away. I mean, you've got these clubs, teams like Sunderland and stuff that will just take fans everywhere.
Yeah, look at Leeds. I mean, on a Tuesday night they brought the whole... They had the whole stand, didn't they?
Yeah, these are historically big clubs, whereas Reading is really a small town club.
And it also, and it doesn't help as well that Reading haven't got large, you know, expats, but you know what I mean. There's not a lot of Reading fans, say, like, obviously there's a lot of people from Middlesbrough who might move down to London for a job, so therefore they get more fans away. There's probably not a lot of Reading fans living in Manchester to go to a Burnley away or a,
I mean, I don't know about you, but I know lots of Leeds fans, but they probably couldn't point Yorkshire out on a map. You know what I mean?
So. There's not generations of Reading fans, are there?
No.
Necessarily.
Well, we were drawing 4,000 fans at Elm Park 20 years ago.
That's what I'm saying. You know, give it 40 years at this level, maybe maybe we're good.
As I said, Reading go away, and they're in the Premier League a lot. We're in the Premier League last time. It doesn't matter that we were losing. You were still getting a couple of thousand away fans. As you said, Westy, success will bring fans.
Exactly. Yeah. Does. Same as historic success keeps fans coming back.
You can jumpstart it a little bit with initiatives like subsidising travel and cheaper tickets, but generally, I said, fans want to go away.
Well, you look at the season when we went up last time, where we took a full stadium to West Ham and Southampton for those two big games.
Yeah.
If we were in mid-table, we wouldn't have done that.
I mean,
we didn't
in the West Ham game at the end of the following season, did we?
Exactly. It's about success. It's about glory.
Yeah. Well, I can remember going to the semi-finals against Wigan away. We had the whole of their side of the stand.
Orange
not behind the goal. It was all the way down the side, and we outnumbered them. But again, it's not going to happen every week.
Mm. Rewarded with a 0-0 that day.
It's good enough.
Nothing happened. Andy Gurney had to play.
It's good enough.
Anyway, I'm rambling about Andy Gurney, so that usually means it's time to move on.
This is not
Let's move on to any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
Right, time to look forward to a couple more Championship games. The game's coming thick and fast, gents. It's unrelenting. I think we've got Saturday, Tuesday up to the middle of March now.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yes, in a way, when we're winning. So we've got a couple more games, starting with Tuesday's trip to Huddersfield. Now, this is a place we've already won this season. We obviously went up there in the FA Cup and we won 1-0.
We did.
So going back up there, a team that are sort of sitting around the middle of the table, they're 16th. They're only a couple of points. They're 1 point behind us, in fact. And they're a team that have, not on a great run of form. They haven't won in the last three. Before that, in fact, I don't think they've won at home since the 10th of January. Yeah, so they're on a bit of a barren run themselves.
They're not great at home, are they?
So, I don't really know what to say. But I mean, they're a functional side. Obviously, they came...
They win, that's what I'm saying.
Well, they came to the Medeski Stadium earlier in this season and beat us.
Yeah, good
they remind me a lot of us this season. Functional... But nothing spectacular.
No.
Obviously, Naki Wells is the danger man. Always causes running problems. I'm not sure if he's fit to play, but I've got nothing else to say. I've got nothing else to say about Huddersfield. Johnny, I'll let you take up the mantle.
I think you summed up quite well the fact that it petered out into nothing.
What, like the season?
Yeah.
No, I think away games suit us at the moment. I think we can go up there, get a result. I don't think too many eyes will be on the FA Cup just yet. As you say, I mean, we've got 2 weeks and we've got four games before it, so I think we'll go up there and nick a win. I've been quite pessimistic about our last few away games, but for once I'm going into an away game feeling optimistic.
Okay, we'll do the prediction in just a minute, but following that, it's Nottingham Forest at home, a team that under Stuart Pearce were in freefall. Couldn't buy a win. Sonny Dougie Freeman's come in and they've won three out of their last four games. Should have been four, really, but they had that absolutely crazy game against Blackpool with all those injury time goals and drew four all. They play Bournemouth, though, before Reading, so could upset the apple cart a bit. But, I mean, Forest, the team, obviously, they absolutely thrashed us earlier in the season. And I said on this podcast, I said, oh, I think Forest will go out. They've got a really strong team, and they had it. But obviously, Asson Belonga's now out for the season. Season-ending injury for him, so that there goes an £8 million striker. But
they're certainly scoring goals.
Yeah, I mean, they've got 14 in the last four games.
Yeah, again, I thought they had a strong side with a poor manager, and that's the way it panned out. So I think you probably will see them sort of fly up the league a little bit now.
What do you think they'll do, though, when they come to Reading? Do you think they'll rock up and try and get that point, or is it just going to go gung-ho and go for it? They've got an outside sniff of playoffs.
They're quite free scoring at the moment, so they're obviously not sitting back too much, and Friedman must have said to them, look, let's concentrate on what we're good at and let's go on attack side. So I expect they're coming attackers, which might actually suit us
very much. So Mikel Antonio, though, nailed on score, isn't he?
Yeah, he always runs us ragged, doesn't he, every time he plays against us.
Just like Joe Tabb, Noel Hunt and Stephen Hunt all scored against us on Saturday.
Joe Tabb should have had a goal.
Yeah, he missed one at the back.
Certainly
post,
an assist as well. No, yeah. Stephen Hunt playing, and Noel Hunt's out for the season as well, unfortunately. So we're wishing Noel a speed recovery. Real shame for him because he just sort of found a place after a miserable time at Leeds. So best wishes to you, Noel. Hope you get fit soon. Right, prediction league time. For the past...
there's a lot of red on there.
Yeah, for the past three games now, not one of myself, Johnny Westy or Charles have got a single result right, yet alone a scoreline.
No.
In fact, if you go back the game before that, we've got one out of the last 16 between us.
Have you already predicted then, Wim?
I did. Me and Charles sat down on the podcast extra last Friday. I went with a 1-1 and Charles went for a 3-1 Reading victory.
It's a bit optimistic.
I'll go last because I'm last.
Okay. I'll go for another 1-0 win. No, a 2-1 win. A 2-1 win.
I'm going to go for, against what I'd normally do, a home win. And I'm going to say 1-0 Huddersfield.
1-0. Right, Forest. Gents?
You start,
Johnny?
You
Me?
Start. You can start, mate.
Unbelievable.
You're leading.
I'm the league leader. I'm going to go for... just because I can't... I think this home run's going to continue. I'm going to say an entertaining 3-2 Royals win.
Oh, 3-2. That'd be good. Liven things up a bit.
Johnny?
Get a few season tickets for next season, maybe. I'll go for a 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw.
Two. Right. Well, based on the fact I'm last, I'm going to go for a miraculous away win.
It's not that miraculous.
No. If Leeds can put two past us, let's go 3-1
Forest. 3-1 Forest.
By the way, I don't want this to happen.
Yeah, you do.
Although, I did say...
You'll take prediction E Gloria for anything.
I'm changing tactics, so I'll keep backing Reading. It's not
right. No, well, I said none of us are on a particularly great streak, so there you go. Right, that just about wraps up the show. One final bit of news before we go. The band that put together our intro theme, Violet Class, is splitting up. Moving on to Projects New.
Have they put a helpline for people ringing up upset about it, like Take That did?
I imagine there is one.
I have to get that number.
Well, a good band anyway, and thanks very much. We'll continue using their theme so their spirit will live on.
That's it.
For as long as we do a podcast. So at the rate we're going, probably about another 3 weeks.
You're only as good as your best record.
When you're as good as your last podcast.
Mm-hmm. If that's the case, we're in trouble.
Yeah, we are. Seriously.
On that note, I'll be sitting down with Charles on Friday to record another podcast extra. In the meantime, head over to thetalisten.com. There's plenty of analysis and reaction to all of these games. I said it's a non-stop schedule, so there is... plenty going up every day. Check out the player ratings and report from Ipswich. Plenty from our stats desk as well. And there's lots of other goodies. So head over to thetalisten.com. As mentioned, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review if you get the chance. As for us, we'll be back either Sunday or Monday. We'll have intense behind-the-scenes negotiations on that front. Mm. But in the meantime, thanks very much for listening. And come on, you arse. It's funny how the crowd's always been.